was just talking some serious fighting words to Connor. When I said something, it was because he was saying stuff to Connor. And those are some real fighting words for a guy who was signed to fight in a real fight. You're challenging us to a boxing match with real fighting words? No one is going to speak. Even Connor doesn't want to give him any clout. Someone needs to tell this guy to shut up. I wasn't trying to have anybody's back, but you're talking fighting words? It doesn't make no sense when people do that. It's like people talking like that and challenging somebody to a basketball game. Boxing is just boxing. It's only one piece of the fight. So someone is going to fuck you up if you don't watch it. And with that, welcome to Early Stoppage, your show where the news of the day is usually given just enough time, but sometimes not enough. If this is your first time stopping by, we thank you. And get ready for something you won't find anywhere else. I'm John Franklin. I'm joined by the God, Father of Fight Night Picks, Craig Allen. Craig, how are you?
John, I'm well. You know, I only had to hit the bleep button once in that intro, so that's better than most weeks. You know, you got to keep me on my toes. So I've only got the one I got to go back and look at. But overall, really looking forward to this week. We've got question mark kicks on Saturday. We get the fight companion on Saturday. Maybe I'll pull out some proper 12 like I did the last time. I'm not a big drinker, so a couple of beers and a couple of shots of proper 12. I felt fine, but there are a few commenters that were like, man, Craig's getting drunk. No, not yet. Not on this show. Not in these COVID times, John Franklin. Let's continue on.
You got to let him know, Craig. It takes more than that to sink a Canadian boat, baby. Craig, on this episode of Early Stoppage, we talk Nate's big ask, Bones talking goats, and we update the Jake Paul, Ben Askren saga. But we begin, Craig, you're not going to believe it. We begin with Bellator. Bellator MMA had two big announcements this week. One is that their content will be on the Showtime Network moving forward. And two, they're going to hold a light heavyweight Grand Prix. And not for nothing, it's kind of stacked.
Who did up that graphic? And now they see that graphic all over the internet without giving attribution. What the hell?
None. Craig, let's start with what is more impactful. The announcement and finish. Oh, let's start with which was the more impactful announcement, and finish with how much will this all move the needle in the end?
This is such a good question, John. If you hadn't written it, I was going to ask it to you, whether it was Underground Whisper Network in the DM somewhere, I would have found a way to incorporate this and to ask you, because for me, the content moving to Showtime actually doesn't mean anything to me. Like, I was in MMA again. I've told the story 1,000 times if I haven't told it already. I get into it for Shogun and Machida. I get into it for GSP. I was watching the UFC exclusive. I wasn't paying attention to Bellator. I was in middle school. So when I really got back into MMA, it took some time. And, Craig Allen MMA 1.0, if you will, it was just UFC. 2.0, I was going back. I was watching, Strikeforce, Pride, Bellator to a large extent. I was going back and watching all those Chandler fights, the Alvarez fights, my Ill Will Brooks fights, Marcin Held. But then there's Craig Allen now. There's 2.0. So 2018 to now. I've known Bellator with DAZN and the Paramount Network. The UFC's been on Fox and then ESPN. The other promotions, I go out and find them. But up here in Canada to watch Bellator, it was on DAZN. It was on the Paramount Network. I made that leap to DAZN. So for them to move to Showtime, with my DAZN subscription, I still get football. I'll stick with them. I still get the boxing. But with Bellator moving to Showtime, it doesn't seem like to me it's a huge boost to, gain any Canadian fans. I mean, if you look at it, Showtime for us, especially with Bell, if you have a Bell subscription, they're way up there at the top. Like, they're really out of the way. It's hard to find Showtime on satellite television. So for me, I don't know how big of a boost this one is, but man, that light heavyweight Grand Prix, huge. Obviously, the announcement of the Pitbull-Sanchez fight, well, it was inevitable. They had to fight. They're fighting in a tournament. So it was kind of like, oh, well, there's the release date. Now we at least know when they're going to fight. But that light heavyweight Grand Prix is huge. The fact that, boom, right off the hop, you get the fight between Yoel Romero and Rumble Johnson, that's awesome. I look at the other fight for April 15th. That's a big one. You get the title fight between Nemkov and one really tough out in Phil Davis. I think that's a great fight. Obviously, they fought in the past. The fight between Dovletsen Yagshimaradov and your guy, Beeston 25-8. That's awesome. I mean, when I found out that Bellator had signed Dovletsan Yagshimuradov a while ago, I was excited about it. It was more or less, well, who's he going to get matched up with? They waited to put him into this tournament. He's got a great shot against Corey Anderson and vice versa. That's a huge fight that'll definitely fly under the radar. And then Lyoto Machida, Ryan Bader, that is the classic weird bucket of muscles. I mean, you get up for it because it's two big names, but Ryan Bader got knocked out by Vadim Nemkov in impressive fashion. And Lyoto Machida is just like, and I keep referencing the song. I don't know if your kids listen to Fred Penner down in the States, but when I was growing up, Fred Penner was a huge deal up here. And I actually sang this song not long ago, and I've gone on for a while here. I'm going to leave you with this. The cat came back the very next day. The cat came back. They thought he was a goner, but the cat came back. He just couldn't stay away. That's like Lyoto Machida. I get into MMA for this guy. Like, he's still hanging around. So for me, I get excited by this Grand Prix. But the Showtime thing doesn't mean anything to me. Should it? I don't know. Should it? You tell me.
I don't think so. I mean, I think that it you know, they have done their boxing thing. They then, you know, Bellator's had their crossovers with boxing in the past and kickboxing and whatnot. Bellator seems open to anything. Side note before I get into any of this, if you're Bellator MMA, I can't get off the phone with the creators of Cobra Kai trying to get Lyoto Machida on that show. I can't stop calling them. That is the crossover they need to make happen. That aside, and if this was a Netflix property, it would have been happened. But with Showtime, we'll see. You know, one of the big takeaways that I've been seeing about this is that, you know, Ryan Bader's inclusion in this tournament holds up the heavyweight division. Listen, guys, I got to be honest with you. I couldn't care less about him holding up the heavyweight division. I don't know who you're going to put in that spot instead of him to give this, because realistically you have three big name fights and then the Corey Anderson fight, right? So, I said big name fights, meaning both parties involved have big names. I like, and maybe memory's not serving me correctly, but I like these Grand Prix where the champ goes into it. And so he's going to fight Phil Davis. If he loses, Phil Davis is the champ, right? And then Phil Davis is going to fight the winner of Anthony Johnson and Yoel Romero. If one of them win, they're the champ. And then they got to go all the way up. So I like, you know, this idea, and I've heard people kind of down on this idea in the past, this idea that the champ could lose the belt and not fight in the finale. The champ's going to fight in the finale because whoever is holding the belt is going to make it all the way to the championship. That's the point. So that, to me, makes this even more interesting, meaning that you have a world, a light heavyweight world Grand Prix, but you have three title fights to get to it. That makes it even more interesting to me. So I'm all over this. I think this should be our entree into, and Craig hates when I do this. He's probably going to edit it out. This should be our entree into Bellator Fight Companions, this Grand Prix. That would be fun, I think. So, I'm super into this for a guy that isn't even quite sure Bellator's how you say it.
Yeah, I mean, Wednesday nights, let's just throw out early stoppage. Forget about it. We'll just do Bellator Fight Companions for all five that'll watch. John, let's parlay this into the fact that Khabib came out this week and said that he views Dustin Poirier as the champion and it's time to move on. However, Dana White said that Khabib's the champ and they're going to meet in Las Vegas. So what's the deal? Why can't these two just break up? And who's at fault for the miscommunication? And further to that, did you read that Khabib is still a part of the USADA testing pool as well?
I did not read that, but I do think Khabib is keeping his options open. Let me rephrase that. Khabib is keeping his option open. The option that he wants is Georges St-Pierre. And if he thinks that he needs that belt, I don't think he thinks he needs the belt to fight St-Pierre. He's right. He doesn't need the belt to fight St-Pierre. Although I will say, having that belt does add the cherry on the sundae of getting Georges St-Pierre back. Georges St-Pierre would fight Khabib in a lot of scenarios, in a lot of places, under a lot of rule sets, just to get it in. I think he would do it on Submission Underground. I think he would kick whatever. He wants to fight Khabib, okay? But the idea that he could become the 155-pound champion as well and be the first ever triple champ, apologies to Henry Cejudo, and be the first ever triple champ, I think just adds a layer to it. I think that's why Dana is keeping the belt on him too, because he is sitting there in front of Khabib saying, it's Poirier, it's GSP. I want the Poirier fight. You want the GSP fight. Let's figure this out. You know, we've all had that girl who just when you think there's no hope left, does or says one little thing that you're like, all right, I can't walk away from this situation. That's who Khabib is to Dana. Khabib has said 1,000 times, I'm done. But there's got to be something that keeps Dana sticking around. Maybe it's his own stubbornness. I don't know. But there's something that's still drawing him to this, to Khabib, getting Khabib in a fight.
You know, when you listen to some of those like crappy old, like, we're playing the classics, we're playing the oldies. And this is where I'm going to tread lightly, but there's a lot of 80s music on those stations. So maybe when you were growing up, you were a big fan of the Arrows. You remember the song Meet Me in the Middle?
No.
Give me half a chance. Ooh, baby. What a terrible song. But, I mean, Dana White just keeps playing this one on repeat. And that's the worst thing. You grow up in Canada. We have the CRTC. They have to play a minimum amount of Canadian music. So you end up hearing Billy Talent and Nickelback over and over and over again. Maybe you get the Tragically Hip. But I look at this one and we just keep having the same conversation. But why do we have it? Because it keeps being presented to us by these central figures, Dustin Poirier, GSP, Khabib, and Dana White. And they can't get each other out of their respective minds, I guess. So I look at this one and it's a tricky one. I mean, is GSP the one that's going to be able to pop that cherry that you keep talking about? Is he going to be able to take that O from Khabib? I don't know if he will be. I don't think there's a miscommunication, but again, Khabib's alluded to the fact that he's been, you know, kept in the USADA testing pool because you have to be there for something like 6 months after you retire. Maybe, you know, you go back on it and at least you've still been tested. For me, I think he's going to stay in this testing pool until we get that next fight. Will it be Conor McGregor? Will it be Dustin Poirier? Will it be GSP? I think that the conversation really has centered more so around GSP, and hopefully that's what we get, but it remains to be seen. I think 2021 is going to be a huge year for MMA, and the fact that Khabib's still in that conversation is definitely going to be a central talking point for this year.
No way the fans of Early Stoppage thought there would be this much singing this short into the... I mean, we're barely
get ready.
15 minutes into this thing. And we've had, I feel like, based on what you said and your response, I should be singing some Kylie Minogue. La, 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 la.
Spare us.
Because Dana White can't get you out of his mind, Khabib. All right, let's move on, Craig. Nate Diaz was interviewed this week by a friend of the show, Errol Hawani. And when that's friend of the show, Errol Hawani, for those who like to pronounce things properly. And when the subject came up of what's next, he seemed like he wanted to make fights with the Diamond or Chucky Olives. I'm not crazy about either fight. Are you?
No. Like, right, win a fight and fight in the division. Like, what are we doing here? I'd like to fight Charlie Olives, too. Apparently, we're calling him Chucky. But I'd like to fight Charlie. And I, you know, would you pay to see it? I know we're going to talk about it later on in the show, John. But it's like, hey, Barstool. Hey, Robbie Fox. I'm the money fight. Give me the money. Because you know what? If I fought Robbie Fox, I would take a quarter of the money Jose Canseco took, and I'd last four times as long. And I'd probably last later on at night four times as long. But again, I probably don't inject things into my root. So maybe I don't. But in this circumstance, Nate Diaz, why are you calling for this fight? Nate Diaz might as well call for a fight against Khamzat Chimaev. He's probably more likely to get that fight than he would be against the Diamond or Charlie Olives. And listen, you can say, Craig, you're a wild man. Yes, I am. Nate Diaz was originally supposed to take on Dustin Poirier, what, a year and a half ago? Like, are we still going to hang our hats on that one? I'm not. So, I'm not reading into this one at all.
You know, the problem with the Diaz brothers, both of them, is sometimes they like to hit pause on life for themselves and forget that the rest of the world doesn't hit pause. Just because a year and a half ago, or however long it was, that you thought you were going to get a fight with Dustin Poirier, that ain't the guy that's around anymore. No. That Dustin Poirier ain't the Dustin Poirier that's clocking into the UFC offices these days. He's a completely different guy. And if you think you still deserve a fight with that guy, Dustin Poirier of now, you don't. So like you said, you need to remain relevant. You need to stick around. I honestly, matchup-wise, I'm going to be honest, matchup-wise, they're both interesting fights. You know, I think Olives is all over Nate. I think Listen, we talked last week about how Nate seems to always show up and at least be Nate Diaz, which is fighting to the level of his competition, kind of hanging in there, giving you enough of a fight for him to at least argue that he won, which is not always true, but he fights well enough for at least there to be an argument about it. I think Olives is better than him everywhere. I think Poirier is probably better than him at least on the feet and is good enough to keep it on the feet. So, but Nate's going to make it interesting, you know? So he definitely doesn't deserve the fights, but it's hard to, you know, deny him these opportunities when you know that he takes a Chuck Olives fight and makes it that much bigger. You know what I mean?
Old Chuck
Olives. Yeah, so that's where I think it gets interesting for me, where like Nate is, listen, despite what Dana says, there's four or five things Dana's never going to live down. One of them is women are never going to fight in the UFC. The other is Nate Diaz isn't a needle mover. And I think that now we know he is, and he just changes the dynamic. The reality is, a fight between Nate Diaz and either one of these guys is probably a bigger than a fight if they fight each other. That's the reality.
Yeah, that's true. And you know what? I'm going to change gears here for a second, because we've been talking about these PFL roster announcements here lately. And listen, there wasn't a carparts.com email that came out this week. Good to know that they signed John Tuck, but not that John Tuck, to be their chief operating officer. That was one that came out this week. But we had our official reveal of the 2021 heavyweight and women's lightweight rosters. John, you know, we could really break it down. We could go through everything single fighter, which I've done in the past, and I probably will here, so buckle up. But were there any surprises? Do you see any, like, possible dark horses with these divisions? Because, you know, in years past, or I will say in year past, because they only had one season of the women's lightweight division, it was what it was. I mean, there were pretty much three front runners. You had Sarah Kaufman, Larissa Pacheco, and of course, Kayla Harrison. That was last season. Obviously, in the finale, you got Pacheco and Kayla Harrison. Harrison won out. And then in the heavyweight division, I want to say the finals was Jared Rosholt and Ali Isaev. And Isaev ended up winning the $1 million. He's still undefeated. You have the majority of the fighters coming back, but you do have a new cast of characters as well. And I'd say majority at the top. Any surprises here whatsoever for you?
No, I mean, obviously Isaev and Fabricio Werdum becomes an interesting matchup, because Werdum, you know, there was a time, you know, you don't have to be that old to remember when people were calling Fabricio Werdum the heavyweight goat. Wasn't that long ago. And
was that?
We probably did it on an earlier episode of Early Stoppage while you're acting like on another network. We probably were at least having that conversation before Stipe, you know, planted them. So from that perspective, that is interesting. But, you know, you could also make a case that this is just, you know, a drawn out way to give Fabricio and Kayla Harrison $1 million. So here's what I like about this show. And I'm going to challenge you. Here's the challenge. You could go up and down these rosters.
I will.
Tell me what makes them compelling, right? But can you really make me care? Because I represent the people that the PFL is looking for. You represent the people that they have. So can you really make someone who is less interested in MMA than me? I'm fairly interested. I just don't go for things that aren't, you know me. I'm half casual. Can you sell someone who's less interested than me on these rosters?
I'm going to knock out three names in the heavyweight division that I'm not interested in at all, and I don't think they'll perform overly well. And I hope that they prove me wrong. Hatef Moeli, I don't know how well he's going to do in this. His record's not the greatest. And, you know, he's in the later half of his 30s. Does that matter all that much at heavyweight? Not so much, but Hatef Moeli, not all that excited for. Brandon Sales, nice record, 39 years old, hasn't fought a great level competition. He was supposed to take on Greg Hardy on Dana White's Contender Series. He pulled out of that fight. Not all that interested. Bruno Capellozza, not all that interested in all, either. If you have a look at his level of competition, not that great. Anche D'Elia. John, I got so excited about Anche D'Elia. Who is it? Oh, we have a commenter all the time that says, boys, who is your favorite fighter outside of the UFC at heavyweight? And his has always been consistently Anche D'Elia. So I had to go back through and watch a lot of this guy's fights. He's fought a very, very high level competition. He has a north-south choke win at heavyweight. How often do we see that in MMA, period? He was originally supposed to take on, and I'm not joking, Ciryl Gane in 2020. The fight was like, it was booked. They both went to Abu Dhabi. And then in the 11th hour, Anche D'Elia wasn't released out of his PFL contract. Listen, sometimes you can't pull a Campbell McLaren and say, ah, all right, I'll let you fight over there, Gustavo Lopez. No, they reeled him back in. Anche D'Elia is in this season. Henan Fahea, big time fighter with LFA. I believe he only has one loss on his record. You know, he's a guy that you really have to watch out for. Exciting guy. Denis Goltsov has been fighting a very high level competition for a really long time over in Russia. Competed in the last season of the PFL. Lost to Ali Isaev his last time out. Great fighter. Muhammad Usman, brother of Kamaru Usman. Heavy hitter. He's a guy to watch out for. Justin Willis. I mean, the last time we saw Justin Willis in a cage, it was Curtis Blaydes going, big titty, go home. And that was the last time we saw Justin Willis. So it's an exciting season at heavyweight. I'm really looking forward to a lot of these matchups. And the built-in narrative that it's jiu-jitsu against Olympic caliber wrestling between Ali Isaev and Fabrizio Verdum. So do you kind of try and keep them away during the season as much as you can based on seeding? I don't know, but I'd love to see that fight right out of the gates. And then you get to see, you know, prove it to me. What can you do? And then maybe they match up later on in the season. Hopefully we don't get Alex Gilpin, Lance Palmer, like three times like we did the last time. Hopefully these guys don't have to fight three or four times during the season. Too much of a good thing is never enough, but we'll see what happens there. And at women's lightweight,
go ahead.
Okay.
Let me challenge you.
All right.
Narrative wise, never mind who's going to narrative wise.
They don't do a good job.
Well, no, hold on. Narrative wise, what's the best case scenario final four at heavyweight?
Verdum, Ali Isaev, Muhammad Usman, and I would say Anche D'Elia. And it's not because I'm really high on him, but that's a guy that can get it done in a lot of different ways. And if the UFC was comfortable enough matching him up with Ciryl Gane on short notice, but against Ciryl Gane, you know you already have something.
And then as a backup, you got that, what is it, Goltsov that already fought Isaev? So you got
Denis Goltsov or Henan Fahea.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, let's move on to lightweight.
Women's lightweight is tricky because you got to look at parity from top to bottom. There's some women in this division that, look, I don't know how good, you know, I don't know how well they're going to perform. I mean, Mariana Moraes, you look at her record, it's what, 16 and 10? It is what it is. I mean, there was a 3-fight losing streak to eventual UFC fighters, but it's not the greatest. Laura Sanchez should have a good shot. Olena Kolesnik, she's an exciting fighter if you followed her time with Invicta. Jenna Fabian, listen, she was involved with what, the last season of the PFL. She was supposed to take on Kayla Harrison, couldn't fight. She's a kickboxer, has a win over Regina Saskatchewan, Canada's Charmaine Tweet in kickboxing. So that's exciting. Big Charmaine Tweet guy. You got to support your Canadians. And Matt's favorite women's fighter, Cindy Dandwa. Old arms just out there. I'm punching. I'm doing something. Cindy Dandwa. But Kayla Harrison, you know what she's going to do. Larissa Pacheco, you know her from her time with various organizations, whether it's at 45 or 55. Really, you know, bread and butter fighter. You know exactly what you're going to get. The wild card in this season is a fighter representing a litany of different countries named Julia Peitsch. And it's spelled J-U-L-I-J-A-P-A-J-I-C with an accent. John Franklin, I've done the research. 3-0 in MMA. She's got a big frame for women's lightweight. She's a good striker. She is a superstar that you've never heard of, or maybe you've never heard of. She took a fight in Germany against a man very recently, and it was women's MMA fighter versus, doorman. And this doorman had, I swear to God, I'm going to put up a picture next
doorman to you. Like, doorman like a bouncer or doorman
like a bouncer? He looked just like John Franklin, and I'm not lying.
Here we go.
I'm doing, no, same
hairstyle. I can't
wait
to look this up so I can get insulted.
It was probably you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was me.
But if you look up Julia Peitsch, huge for the weight class, She's got a lot of scars, so it's an interesting look there. And I'm not, don't laugh. Like, I'm dead serious.
Oh, when you go, she's got a lot of scars.
She has a full neck tattoo of a tiger, and she does a lot of media, but she speaks a lot of different languages too. Like, I've seen her do German television. She's from, let's check and make sure that we're right here. She's done interviews in English, and her English is actually really good. Let's make sure that we get this right. She's fighting out of Zagreb, Croatia. She is the fifth ranked women's fighter, pound for pound fighter out of Europe Balkans over on Tapology. And listen, I've read a couple different articles. There's one from The Sun that came out here on the 9th. So just a couple days ago, Yulia Peitsch is MMA sensation who beat up male opponent and vows to donate $1 million PFL prize to her mom. So listen, you know that she's got a heart of gold. Her mom might end up with $1 million. Honest to goodness, build this whole season around the fact that Kayla Harrison's probably going to win. Yulia Peitsch is going to be your superstar. Win, lose, or draw, I think that's your winner of the season right there. And I'm not joking.
Here's the test, okay? And I've noticed this about fighters. And I've wanted to bring this up for a while, and it's completely random. So prepare yourself. One, just so you know, the one thing that you can count on, if you are a listener of this show, is that the graphic that you've probably already seen or we'll see is me and that guy that she fought, because Craig said we look a lot. You're going to see the guy. Trust me. I'll make sure it makes it on there. And of
dead
course,
serious.
Of course he lost, because Craig, I love that I'm being compared to this guy.
No, the point is, she lost. No, she beat this guy. She beat him by TKO.
I meant to say, of course he lost. Okay. But the funny part about this is, here's how you'll know how to gauge her superstardom. Joanna on Jacek. Khabib Nurmagomedov. You knew they were making their way towards superstardom when what? Everybody pronounced those impossible names correct. So when people start pronouncing this girl's name right, you'll know that she is on her way. Because there's a few people, fighters out there, I come across, I'm like, nah, I should know this guy's name by now. He's important enough. So listen, Craig gave you the breakdown. There it is. Give me the final four for lightweight. Narrative-wise.
Narrative-wise? Well, yeah, narrative-wise, Yulia Peitsch has to be there. But, you know, final four in terms of talent, probably not. She's only 3-0, pretty basic in MMA. But you never know, she could surprise. For me, it's Larissa Pacheco, Kayla Harrison, and then you're probably going to end up with Laura Sanchez and... maybe Kolesnik. Kolesnik's big for the division, too.
There you go. Go lay your money on Craig. No, I'm kidding. Craig hates that. All right, Craig. Listen, I'm just a guy this week who's talking about guys who interviewed guys. I'm like friend of the show, Aaron Bronstetter. This time the subject is Corey Sandhagen. He sat down with Ara Hovhaney this week, or whatever you do on Zoom these days. And the subject became TJ Dillashaw. Sandhagen said that TJ Dillashaw should fight him when he returns because he doesn't think Dillashaw should have a PED suspension and then jump the line to a title shot. So, Craig, is Sandhagen right on principle? And should that be the fight?
Well, yeah, he's right on principle. But didn't TJ Dillashaw come out like this time last year, halfway through his suspension, and go, yeah, Dana promised me a title shot. What of it? So you've got the title fight already booked. You've got Sterling fighting Jan. Pretty good window of opportunity for old TJ Dillashaw to come right back into the title picture. Now, whether you agree if it's right or wrong, Dominic Cruz fought for a title recently. So to me, yes, did Dominic Cruz shoot up with EPO? Not that I know of. But TJ Dillashaw is a huge superstar and one of my favorite fighters to watch. And I get jazzed when the Red Hot Chili Peppers comes on and somebody makes a walk. So Sandhagen's right on principle. That'd be a heck of a fight. I think I don't know anybody who wouldn't want to see Sandhagen fight Dillashaw. I'd be there buying a ticket. I think Dillashaw is probably going to get the next shot. And I don't think it'll be warranted. I think people will be upset, but I think that's probably what will happen.
Well, the joke we've made in the past is that, you know, Cruz, Dillashaw, and Sandhagen are the grandfather, father, and son of like that style of fighting, right? Like Dillashaw picked it up when he was training, helping Uriah Faber, trained for Dominic Cruz. Dominic Cruz obviously started it. In terms of what we accept, you know, obviously he picked up from somewhere. But then now Corey Sandhagen is the guy who kind of switches stances, has a lot of movement. So I think from that perspective, stylistically, it's, you know, it's the eliminator pool, right? You know, who's the best person that uses this style? So from that perspective, yeah, it's interesting. And I agree with Sandhagen. The thing I like about this kid is he says, I feel like I deserve a title shot, but I'm really not going to wait around for it. If I got to go out and beat everybody to get the title shot, so be it.
So if you're a guy like Corey Sandhagen, on the scale of I've given up on my gimmick to addicted to the shindig, where is Corey Sandhagen right now? Like, has he totally gone away from the fighter that he was to start? Or has he kind of realized where he's at? You kind of already answered this one, but can he stop? Or is he too addicted to the shindig?
I think he's way too – he's addicted to the shindig, all right? That's what got him popped.
Well, that's Dillashaw, but all right, we'll move on. John, Cara Dune is no more, at least not portrayed by Gina Carano. She isn't. The former women's champion has been able to outrun her social media fingers until today when Disney threw in the towel. John, what do you make of the situation? And might we see Carano back in the MMA space? I mean, she's in her late 30s, too. You got to consider that.
Well, I mean, being in the MMA space carries a lot of different connotations. Brendan Schaub's in the MMA space. He's not fighting. So I think that we could see her again, but she's really kind of been committed to, I'm out, I'm staying out. There's been a few rumors here and there about fights, stuff with Ronda, stuff here and there. But I think that she really has done an effective job of moving on. The real question is, how much is this going to damage her in Hollywood? Is it just, I'm out? Can she play the Disney card and say, well, yeah, what I said was a little too much for Disney, but that doesn't mean I can't go make, you know, the joke this week was like, she's trying to be in the next Mel Gibson movie. But there are plenty of people who have said and done plenty of things and kept their jobs in Hollywood, right? So there's a place for her, but it depends on how scorched earth she really is. If it's just a Disney issue, she can bounce back and avoid the MMA space altogether. If it's not a Disney issue and it's a larger issue, then she may find herself back in the MMA space because that's the place that'll have her.
So I've watched 2 or 3 episodes of The Mandalorian, but it's like they were on in the background. Other people were watching. I wasn't paying attention. I'm not a big Star Wars fan. I hope that doesn't offend anybody. I hope we don't lose viewers due to that one, but I'm not a big Star Wars guy. And I'm not the biggest Gina Carano guy either. John, I'm totally out on this entire situation. I have to ask a question, though. The reason she's out was because of an Instagram post, right?
Yes.
And that was the Mel Gibson reference. I read that post briefly.
No, the
today.
Mel Gibson thing was more like a joke. Her reference was saying that it wasn't. She was kind of saying that the Jews in the Holocaust era were not really so much, you know, taken out by the Nazis as they were by their neighbors, and that their neighbors.
Yeah, I read the post.
Came down and that.
Why the hell would you post that on the internet? What are you thinking when you post something like that? Like, are you serious? Like, it made me mad more than anything. Does somebody deserve to lose their job over that? I don't know. Who am I to say? But it's incredibly distasteful. And it's a ridiculous thing to post on the internet. I don't think anybody should ever post something like that. Again, freedom of speech, do whatever you want. I think it's ridiculous. So who am I to say that, you know, she should lose her job with Disney? Will it prevent her from getting other employment opportunities? Probably will. Probably not a good thing to say. But that was, what, one post of many? I mean, she's put some crazy things out there on the internet. Like, this isn't the first ridiculous thing that we've seen. So I don't know, man. I don't know. I mean...
Well, the idea, and let's just touch on this briefly because we usually don't go too far into this stuff, and I'm not trying to go too far into it now, but I guess the idea of entitlement, right, for anybody, whether you want to call it, you know, white privilege or whatever, the idea behind that is that you are conducting in yourself in a way that you feel is sort of free of consequence, right? And I don't think there's any more way to sort of show yourself as feeling like you're free of consequence than saying something like that. You know, that to me is the part of this that is, you know, because a lot of people are coming out and they're talking about our First Amendment right. Here's what I'd like to say to the First Amendment crowd, and I said this to some friends of mine. A lot of times, the First Amendment crowd and my rights crowd, First Amendment, Second Amendment, that whole crowd. The thing that they miss is they're also sort of commingled with the capitalist crowd, right? Like, I believe in free speech. I believe in capitalism. Well, if you believe in capitalism, you should understand that this girl is a financial liability for saying those things. So if you're against, she's costing, it's a money decision. They may wrap it in whatever sort of moral, you know, stance they want to, but she is costing them money by spouting off this way. So she's a liability.
Let me take a Canadian stance on this. I'll be polite. Don't say stupid stuff on the internet. Don't say rude things on the internet like that. Like, I see stuff in the comments all the damn time on this platform called YouTube that just makes me upset. Why would you say that? Like, do you think you'd say something like that to a person to their face? No, you wouldn't. Like use your common sense. Be kind to people on the internet, and we wouldn't have to talk about this stuff. Use your brain.
I agree. You know, it's funny. You know, me being a teacher and us still doing distance learning, I tell my kids all the time, you know, we're not going to be on computers forever. And there's real life consequences when we get back to school for conducting yourself a certain way. And I don't forget this kind of stuff. So, you know, act like you're, don't let the fact that we're at a distance now dictate your behavior. All right, Craig, let's move on to sparring sessions. Craig, this week, John Jones posted a graphic that showed the fighters who have the most wins in title fights. And it was captioned, and I'm paraphrasing here, if your favorite fighter isn't on this list, he doesn't belong in the GOAT conversation. The list is as follows. We'll pop the graphic up here, but it's John Jones, George St. Pierre, Demetrius Johnson, Anderson Silva, Matt Hughes, Randy Couture, Jose Aldo, Amanda Nunes, Ronda Rousey, Daniel Cormier. So do you agree with Jones? If your favorite fighter is not on this list, does he belong in the GOAT conversation? And there are some very glaring omissions.
Conor McGregor, huge omission. Now, is he a GOAT? You can disagree, but he's financially, he's a GOAT. So, I mean, Conor McGregor is one big one. Another one is probably Royce Gracie. Most wins in UFC title bouts. Boss Rutten's not on that list. Where do you throw Boss? Fedor Emelianenko's not on that list. I mean, most wins.
You're missing a big one.
And title bouts. What are we doing?
Khabib Nurmagomedov is not on this list.
Khabib's not on that list, and he has UFC title wins, but he's not on that list because it's from six up. Like, there's so many fighters that aren't on that list. Sakuraba, where is he on that list? Like, again, we're talking goat talk. Who's going to have a Goat Talk podcast sooner? Is it going to be an NBA show or is it going to be MMA?
It's going to be us. So listen, here is another, listen, John Jones is a stud. Let me tell you who's not on this list, Craig.
Sure.
That lets you know why John Jones is a stud. Israel Adesanya is not on this list. Stipe Miocic is not on this list. So John knows what he's doing.
Clarence Howard isn't on this list. And if you're coming on, come on. Why are we leaving him off?
So do you think that unless you have at least six wins in a title bout, you can consider yourself a GOAT? That's the question.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, Sean O'Malley still call himself a GOAT, and he just lost, and he's talking about doing heroin and putting Casey Kenney in uncomfortable situations. So, I don't know, man. I mean, to me, again, I've got the flag right behind me. Now, when I cut this out and I put it, package it a certain way, maybe you can't see that flag there, but I have a Royce Gracie signed flag, and that's one of the coolest things I think I have in this office. Is he not a GOAT? I mean, to me, he's on my Mount Rushmore being GOATs, but I also had who? Art Davies was on that, and so was Campbell McLaren, so take that with a grain of salt. But I don't think that most wins in UFC title bouts equates to being a GOAT. John Jones is, of course, a GOAT, but there's a lot of, like you said, glaring omissions.
Yeah, but only one of them is 14-0. So we'll save this conversation for another day. All right, Craig, you're up. Feature segment this week is over-under. What do you got?
John, we're talking over-under for UFC 258. And I love doing this segment, and I hope you wrote some down. But if you didn't, that's fine. I have five different over-unders. And listen, we keep tabs on this as long as we remember to. John, my first over-under The number of GSP comparisons to Kamaru Usman's current run. He's won 16 fights in a row. He continues to rack up title defenses, though they're not in that GOAT discussion that we discussed earlier, John Jones. If we have the over-under on GSP comparisons to Kamaru Usman at 1.5, do you think we're going to have more or less than 1.5?
You know, that's a tough one because sometimes the UFC tends to whitewash certain fighters. And I just don't know where they're standing with the UFC right now because I don't know where these Khabib GSP negotiations are. So, you know, the word will come down from high. The wild card in this is that Joe Rogan usually doesn't pay attention to much of that stuff. He just kind of, listen, he's taken a lot of criticism. He was defended this week by John Anik.
Yep.
But Rogan tends to go with what Rogan knows. And where that the influx of information ended was anybody's guess. But I think Rogan puts us on the over. So I'll take the over because of Rogan.
I hope we get the over. So I'll take the over. And that's the exact reason. So let's parlay that into the next one. The amount of Joe Rogan comparisons that we'll get between Macy Barber and John Jones at 2.5. Now, there's been a couple of different interviews I've seen out there this week where Macy Barber still thinks that she can beat, match, whatever, John Jones' youngest champion record. Do you think that's going to be a major talking point by our friend, Mr. Joe Rogan?
I sure hope not. I'm going to take the under, but again, this is Rogan we're talking about. He's the wild card. I'm going to take the under. But, yeah, I'm going to take the under. But Rogan could put us in the over.
You silly, silly man. You seem like you still are feeling the after effects of getting beaten up by Yulia Peitsch that time, Mr. Bouncer. I'm going to take the over on this one. Because if not the comparison to John Jones, what are you going to talk about? The ACL injury? How do you sell a co-main event between a number 10 ranked women's flyweight and number 15 ranked women's flyweight? You got to compare to John Jones. You got to try and draw people in. I think that's all we got, but who knows? John, let's move into the next one. The amount of mentions to Gilbert's brother, Herbert, set at 1.5. How many times are we going to hear Herbert's name?
Where's Herbert fighting these days?
Well, he's with the UFC, of course.
I'll take the over.
I'll take the under. He'll be in the corner. They'll mention him one time. That's it. The amount of prelim finishes. Pull up your UFC 258 card. They've shuffled it a little bit. To give you an idea, I'll rip through them. Jillian Robertson taking on Miranda Maverick. Gabe Green taking on Philip Rowe. Potential fight of the night, Craig and Matt Allen talked about. Ricky Simone, Brian Kelleher. You have Andre Yule taking on a short notice replacement, Chris Gutierrez. You have Mallory Martin taking on Pollyanna Viana. Diego, not Douglas Lima, taking on Bilal Muhammad. Remember the name. And in the featured prelim, I did a little bit of a skit in this video. But my guy, the black belt hunter, Adolfo Vieira, taking on Fluffy Anthony Hernandez. Where are we at on this one in terms of an over-under?
Man, this is a tough one because I see a lot of fights where I don't know who's going to get finished because there's a lot of durable fighters.
I got one.
I don't see a finish in Simone Kelleher. I don't see a finish in Ewell, Chris Gutierrez. I don't see a finish in Lima Muhammad. Man. Yeah, I'll take the under. What about you?
I'll take the over. I'm going to go with Vieira and Hernandez, and I'm going to ride that Vieira train until he takes on a good enough striker, and that could be this weekend. Like, I cannot stress that enough. This guy's like a 4-1 favorite, but he has the striking defense of a wounded Canada Goose. Like, it's bad. It's bad, bad. Like, Saperbeg Safarov almost ended the fight against him. And then the Philip Rowe Gabe Green fight, I think it's fight of the night, but it has a definite finishing possibility. So I will take the over on that one.
You know what? I let you down, but I'm going to make a comeback here. So I wanted to try something this week. I just want to say it out loud so that it's ours. And then we'll flesh it out in the future for pay-per-views. I think the featured segment of the pay-per-view week should be something called Give Me Some Props. And we figure out a way to do some prop bets. So prop bet time. I'm just going to throw some at you off the top of my head. Give me your thoughts. Kamaru Usman, Gilbert Burns. Which happens first, a knockdown or a takedown?
Takedown.
Okay. Macy Barber, Alexa Grasso. Longer or shorter than one round?
Oh, longer.
Kelvin Gastelum, Ian Heinisch. More or less than 100 strikes from Gastelum. It's three rounds.
Off the top of your head, that was a pretty good one. I'm going to go under. He said he wants to mix it up. He wants to incorporate the takedowns and the clinch work, which I think is kind of silly when you're taking on a guy that can wrestle quite well.
Bobby Green, Jim Miller. If 50% is the middle ground, right? More time spent on the feet or the ground.
That's a really good one. I'm going to say more than
50. Every once in a while, I got to remind you that I know what I can do this shit off. Go ahead.
I'm going to say on the feet, but I don't care where it takes place. It could take place at a pool hall, and I'd watch that one. Probably watch it even more if it was at a pool hall.
Last one, Julian Marquez, Mackie Patolo. More or less than 30. Oh, Jesus. Now I'm blanking.
References to Kendra Lust?
That's a good one. More or less than 30 coconut bombs. That's for you, commenters. I'll yell.
Less
than 30 coconut bombs. All right, I like that. So in the future, for pay-per-views, give me some props. All right, up next, let's move on to For the Gram this week, Craig. Theo Vaughn and Michael Chandler got together on some content, which I thought was legit. When I first saw it, the more I think about it, obviously it seemed like it was kayfabe. Theo Vaughn brought some Dustin Poirier's hot sauce to Chandler's Super Bowl party. Chandler found it, threw it away, shook his head. That was the clip we got initially. The longer clip was Chandler goes back, takes it out of the trash, tries it, which is you make your own decisions about that. But takes it out of the trash, tries it, says it's pretty good. Here's my question. Did you like this piece of marketing? And what do you think the point of it was? Because I have a theory, but go ahead.
Well, Theo Vaughn moved to Nashville. Michael Chandler's out of Nashville. Theo Vaughn's originally from Louisiana. Dustin Poirier's out of Louisiana. Poirier's Vaughn's boy, but now Vaughn's in Chandler's territory. So let's have a threesome of white guys drinking hot sauce? I don't know. It's obviously to kind of, you know, grease the wheels, so to speak, to get a fight between Chandler and Poirier. I'd be down for that fight. I mean, I think that's a great one. I'm just so glad that Michael Chandler's finally getting his due, and he's not just like that Bellator guy. He's like that guy now, even though he's a little long in the tooth in terms of MMA. But I think that's all it is. And I think Michael Chandler's done a pretty good job of marketing himself, especially in the last year or two. I think this definitely adds to it. And maybe if Michael Chandler goes the route of Ben Askren, where you win one fight impressively, but you just keep losing. But as long as your name's in the headlines, you still set yourself up well for retirement. I think Chandler's got a little bit of that too here.
I agree. I guess the question I'm trying to figure out here is when dealing with Dustin Poirier, do you catch more flies with honey? And I think, or do you catch more flies with hot sauce? I think that what he's doing here in Chandler is saying, I don't need to throw shade at this kid to get the fight. I think Dustin Poirier is looking for business partners. And I think he's looking for business partners. You know, the old saying that we talk about with Chael, here's our Chael reference, of going into business for yourself. I think he's trying to go into business with Dustin Poirier. And that, like, I think that he thinks Poirier really enjoyed the process of fighting Conor McGregor. And when someone, like the pre-fight stuff, Conor donated to his charity, like, he enjoyed that. And I think that for someone that doesn't love the sport, like Poirier has said time and time again, he doesn't love the sport anymore. That's not the kind of guy you want that's going to want to fight you. If like fight, we see a pain in the ass and he's going to have to answer your shit on social media. And so I think that Chandler's seeing that and saying, okay, man, I'll give you some, I'll toss you some flowers about this hot sauce. And then maybe we can do some work here. I think that's the play. I don't really do. I think Theo Vaughn is going to be, I think Theo Vaughn might want to get a finder's fee for Michael Chandler if the fight ends up getting booked. Question that I saw this week on Twitter. I want to get your thoughts. Because we were talking about Chandler's debut. More impressive debut, Michael Chandler or Alistair Overeem when Alistair Overeem beat Brock Lesnar?
probably over him. You got to think, right?
Yeah, that's what I thought. But because everybody was saying it's the most impressive debut for a while, and then somebody brought up over him, and I was like, ah, that's right, over him. All right, Craig, let's move on to one Twitter hitter. Craig, this week on one Twitter hitter, I just want to check. I want to update the status of Jake Paul and Ben Askren. I want to gauge your level of interest. Because one thing that I did see that was interesting this week is Eddie Alvarez came out and said he thinks Jake Paul might be a better boxer. He thinks Askren's a better athlete. But if Jake Paul finds a way to win, it's going to present a lot of problems for MMA fighters. It's going to be an issue. I disagree. I think that if Jake Paul wins, it's going to have a lot of people thinking they could do it. And more MMA fighters are going to be able to pull this move off. Guys of a lesser name. What's your take? Where do you stand with this whole thing? The Jake Paul's face on the heavy bag, all of it. Do you think Askren's holding his own?
John, I'm to the point where I could care less about this. Don't like, man, care. I got excited about Nate Robinson and Jake Paul. And what happened? My childhood basketball idol got slapped. And I don't know if he's awake yet. And then I got to watch a great fight. But for this one, like, who's getting up for this? Are YouTube fans getting up for it? Are MMA fans getting up for it? Because boxing fans certainly aren't. Eddie Alvarez is kind of lukewarm on it. I feel like I know who did that interview, so props to a Canadian. but I look at this one. I'm not excited about it in the least. If they're asking like $30-40 for this, I'm not going to pay it. I think Triller, again, is running into that issue where BKFC, they did Pauly Malignaggi, Artem Lobov, and then the next event was free and it wasn't very good. And it's not until what, a year plus later, that we have Catching a Feeling taking on somebody whose entire world didn't want them to fight in BKFC, but now they're up for the challenge and they want to fight again. So shouts to the Feeling, Britton Hart. I'm not excited for this in the least.
I'm a little more excited than you are for it because for a couple of reasons.
Why?
One,
why?
Well, I think Ben Askren has a history of biting off more than he could chew. So I think there's a chance he can get in here and be a little over his skis. I think like when he wrestled Jordan Burroughs, he should have known by the way that was going to go, but he still did it. So I'm not comparing Jake Paul to Jordan Burroughs. I guess I am. But I just think that there's, you know, Ben Askren should win this fight, but he's really not that great with his hands. So, I mean, he should win the fight because he fights for a living, Craig. And a guy that fights for a living should be able to step into a boxing match with an amateur and work him. So that's why he should win the fight. But they're kind of, you know, putting a little doubt into it. You know, I think that there's a few things that could fall Triller's way for this to be a big fight. Will Jorge Masvidal get involved in any way? He's already trained Jake Paul. Will Dana White get involved just in terms of his opinion, just in terms of appearing on some, you know, if he gives a little bit of a nudge to Triller, that helps. So does he want to do Askren that favor? Does Israel Adesanya, because if I'm correct, and correct me if I'm wrong, I can't get this straight in my head. I think Adesanya's fighting before this fight happens. It helps if Adesanya wins against Jan Blachowicz because he's there. So there's some things that could fall Triller's way and really help. I think that I'm a lot more interested in it than you are, but we could definitely move on. Speaking of things that mildly have your interest, Craig, Chris Lieben hung him up this week. He retired on what he called a great way to cap a career with a KO victory for BKFC. Craig, take this any way you want. You could do a career retrospective on Chris Lieben. You could, this can be homage paid or questions about the ending. Do you agree that this is a good way to cap off your career? Do you think that Lieben had a career that deserves to have a high-profile cap on it? What are your thoughts on Chris Lieben, his retirement, his involvement in BKFC?
I mean, Chris Lieben was a really big deal when I get into MMA. Like, I say it all the time. I get in 2008, 2009. I'm looking at his record. The fight that obviously stands out to me the most, I know he headlined 2008 with Bisping, lost a decision. He had the fight against Jake Rosholt, and he lost it. Then he went on a three-fight win streak. His biggest fight and his biggest win was that fight against Sexy Ama, was it not? Like, you go back, that fight holds up. Like, that's an awesome fight. If you want to go back and watch that, and maybe, you know, you're not super high on Yoshihiro Akiyama, that's a great one to go back and watch. The fight against Vanderlei Silva that ended in 27 seconds where he knocks him out, UFC 132 is great. Then he loses four in a row. And you look at the level of competition. Mark Munoz, all right, that was a main event. Derek Brunson by decision, Andrew Craig, and then Uriah Hall. And then he's off for a long time, takes a fight against Phil Brony at WBKFF1, the one and only, where Jimmy Lennon Jr. was the ring announcer. How crazy is it to think that that actually happened? I got excited about it and did a whole radio series on it. But the weird thing about Chris Lieben's career that nobody talks about, do you remember in 2016 when he was supposed to sign with Bellator and then he wasn't allowed to fight? Like, does everybody forget about that? And then since then, he fought Phil Brony, Troy Everett, Justin Baseman, Dakota Cochran, and Quentin Henry in bare knuckle. And he finished Quentin Henry in just over a minute. I just remember Chris Lieben for, you know, the crazy fights that he had, the fight against Anderson Silva in 2006. Like, the highs and the lows, I guess, are probably what I'm going to remember Chris Lieben's MMA career. The highest of highs, Akiyama. The lowest of lows, losing to Andrew Craig by split decision in 2013.
Well, yeah,
this on a Silva card.
This is the interesting thing about the fight game, right? Which is the old saying that we've said it a thousand times: fighters don't retire; the ring retires them. So if you can go out on a win, you know it's you know everybody's father time's undefeated except for Tom Brady. He's you know 11,000,001.
He's so, probably still buckled right now. Good for him.
Yeah. So I guess for me, it's. You know, the storybook is you retire after Wanderlei Silva. I mean, that's the fight. You knock Wanderlei Silva out. I don't care how old Wanderlei Silva is. If you know, if you knock Wanderlei Silva out tomorrow, you did something. And I think that, so that's the fight to go out on. But, you know, these guys got bills to pay. They're in a sport where they don't always get paid what they're worth. I think that Dana kept that kid around as long as he could because of his, how much Dana cares about that first season. That first season, those guys in that first season stick around a lot. Listen, he's still running Diego Sanchez out there. He let this kid fight Munoz, Brunson, Craig, and Hall all after the Silva fight. Let me tell you something. Any one of those fights revives your career. He's given this kid good fights. These are big fights that if he wins, gets him put on that path again. So I think for me, I would have liked to see him hanging up a little bit earlier, but, you know, he's cashing checks and still cracking necks, so good for him.
You got excited about Andrew Craig. Well, he beat Kyle Noak when he was good. Beat Rafael Natal, lost to Hani Marks, beats Chris Lieben, then lost three in a row and hasn't fought since, but sorry.
All right, Craig, let's hit the flurry. Let's talk about what we got this week.
Listen, I'm excited about the flurry this week, John. Did you watch Rough and Rowdy?
I didn't.
I did. Instead of watching that trash that was BKFC that everybody was tweeting about, I watched, Rough and Rowdy. And I enjoyed it. You know, like for $20, you sit down, you know what you're going to get. It's low-level boxing. It's nothing real, but it's just for a good time. That Jose Canseco, again, Robbie Fox, I'm here. We're over the 20K now. We're big. Listen, I'll pump my tires. Robbie, you want a platform? You fight me. You bring me down to the States. University of New Brunswick's own, bring me down there. I'll fight Robbie Fox and I'll take a quarter of the money and I'll fight four times as much as Jose Canseco did. So what do you think about that?
I think it's amazing. Just for the record, Robbie Fox isn't the person that fought Jose Canseco, right? It was Billy Football.
No, it was Billy Football, but I don't care about Billy Football. He's way bigger than I am. I don't want that fight.
I'd fight Billy Football, but I can't even beat the female fighter from earlier. So, I mean, I'm hardly in a position to be throwing out challenges.
Yulia Peitsch. I'm sorry for the tire pump. I'm a little bit ashamed of that one. But, hey, if we're getting Robbie Fox, we got to push some buttons. So, 20K, Robbie. 20K.
Let's do it, Askar, Robbie.
Askar was brought in. He's fought with different organizations. He's a fighter out of Illinois. He represents Palestine. Yeah, he's supposed to fight Cody Stamann last week, and then he weighed in, and then there were some medical complications, and he couldn't fight. He was released by the UFC, John. It really weird. Like, nothing's really come out about this one. He seems to think, you know, I'll be back in due time. This is weird.
It's weird that he got cut to you?
Yeah, like, it's weird that they wouldn't say why, and nothing's really come out about it.
Yeah, I think that's weird too, but I mean, I guess my question would be, how much this kid's 11-1, but really, like, how much of an explanation do you have to give when a guy like this gets cut?
You know, he's a big prospect. I'm not joking. Like, that one loss, but he's never lost to a good fighter.
But he's never fought in the UFC. So, I mean, how much do you expect them to? No, but I mean, how much do you expect them to explain it to you if he's never fought in the UFC?
Just like on Shakespeare.
I still don't know why TJ Grant doesn't fight anymore, and that was, you know, 10 years ago. I mean,
when the Atlantic bubble opens up, I'll go down to Halifax and I'll ask him. We'll figure that one out. Glover Teixeira is going to back up the Adesanya Blachowicz fight. Are you, like, waiting on pins and needles and crossing toes and fingers that he gets the fight with Blachowicz? But we wish nothing but the best for Adesanya. I got to say that.
We do. I think that Glover Teixeira winning a title would be a great cap to his career. I'm not overly excited about a Blachowicz Teixeira fight. I think I'd much rather see Adesanya fight. So I guess for me, it's cool that they're starting to have more guys backing up these main events, because it does add an extra wrinkle there. Like, hey man, I'm here. If you drop the ball, I'm here. But I would be disappointed if Adesanya fell out.
I would be too. The move to 205 still perplexes me. I think the fight's Teixeira and Blachowicz, but again, I'm excited for this weekend's pay-per-view, and it's absolute hot garbage. We'll move on. Ryan Hall is out of his fight with Dan Ige. Hall out against Ige, the guy that couldn't get a fight, now is out of his fight. And so, in turn, Ryan Hall was taken out of the rankings, and inserted was Movsar Evloev. John, I'm on that hype train for Movsar. But what's your take here on the Hall fight, you know, kind of backing out? And just for context here, John, Movsar Evloev so far in the UFC, he's beaten Sungwoo Choi, Enrique Barzola, Mike Grundy, Nick Lentz, and he beat Nick Lentz by split decision. Does he deserve a spot in the rankings?
He does, I guess. While you're busy trying to figure out what happened to Askar, I'm wondering, are they taking Hall out of the rankings to send a message? And did he drop out of a fight under some sort of a, because if I'm mistaken, please correct me, but I don't think it's been released as to why he dropped out. It's just that he dropped out. So is it that he waited too long to notify the UFC? Is it something that, you know, is it the quote unquote, personal reasons that Kyrie Irving had? Is it something that, are they using taking him out of the rankings? Because listen, guys come in and out of fights all the time. So is this more a push of Evloev, or is it more, slap of the wrist for Ryan Hall?
Torn hip flexor during his training camp. He confirmed the news to MMA Fighting following an initial report from BJPenn.com.
So do you think that they're taking him out of the rankings because they feel like he's going to be out for a while? Or is it something you do with? Yeah, that's fair.
Probably that he's out for a while. But I love Movsar Evloev. I can't get enough of this guy. But clip that one and make it a meme. But I don't think beating Nick Lentz, and he beat him bad, and it was on short notice. But I don't think that deserves a shot.
So I'm gonna pull your card on that then, because I'm a fan of, you can't take somebody like All Star snubs, right? You can't say somebody was snubbed from the All-Star game without taking somebody off. So if you don't think this kid should be in the rankings, who should? Hall?
Yeah, Hall. I'd have to look. That's a tough one without me looking like 15 to 20, but
it's too late in the show for that. I agree. Flurry.
That's true. The last one, Guram Kutateladze. And listen, MMA fans are nuts over this guy. He beat my guy, Mateusz Gamrot. And beat him pretty handily. And Mateusz was a big deal, and he still is. So he was supposed to be taking on Don Madge, who is the hotness that we haven't seen in a really long time. So now Nazareth Hack Press steps in to take on Don Madge. On a scale of 5 to 10,
okay,
how exciting of a fight is this one?
For me or for the MMA world? For me. No, I like watching Haskarat fight. And I like watching Madge fight. So, I mean, I think an 8.
Don Madge's name is somewhere scribbled on that poster. He fought T. Edwards, and he finished T. Edwards, and T. Edwards doesn't fight in MMA anymore, which sucks because I like watching T. Edwards fight.
He's a good fighter. He's a Phoenix guy.
I'm so excited about this fight. He's a former military member too, is he not? Mm-hmm. T. Edwards? Yeah. Like I wish he was still fighting. And I'm not like saying that. But Don Madge, Nazareth Hackprast. If you can't get Don Madge Guram, if you can't get like a Nazareth Guram, this is such a good fight. I was so excited to see Nazareth fighting Armin Zarukian. Nazareth was out of the fight. Armin got Matt Frivola. Otman Zaitzar, see you later. Abu Zaitzar, also see you later. Those damn Zaitzar brothers. But this fight's awesome. It's an 8.5 to 11. Like that's because 11, it could be an awesome fight. And if it delivers, then I can say 11. But I'm excited about it. That's one of those ones that gets me up in the morning.
All right, Craig, I'm going to do a curveball here and start the conversation. Initially, I was going to get your opinion on something that is going to be the subject of the next Revisionist MMA, which is teammates fighting. And we can have that conversation after this next one goes down. But I want to switch gears, and I want to talk about something Tyrone Woodley said. Tyrone Woodley said today, or recently, I saw it today, that he thinks it's funny that Adesanya said he wanted to wait 2 years to fight John Jones, but the minute that John Jones left the division, he had no problem hopping up to fight Jan Blachowicz. We have 1,000% talked about this in the past, but I want to revisit it because I guess the question that I'm asking here is Woodley onto something in the point that Woodley's trying to make here is that it was kind of a little bit of a chicken ass move to wait till Jones left to get tough. So I guess my question is he right? Or is Adesanya right here and just saying, no, I'm going to control the narrative. I'm going to decide where I fight, when I fight, who I fight. What's your take?
It's probably 50-50. And as a bit of an aside, you want like a 5 to 10 ranking. How excited are you for Vicente Luque and Tyron Woodley?
I'm pretty excited about that fight.
That's a good one. That's a good one. If you were excited for Burns Woodley, get ready for Matt's guy, Vicente Luque. But I'd say, yeah, I mean, a 50-50, it is kind of odd, especially in a matchup against Jan Blachowicz, that you take that fight, because assuming that Adesanya sees that as a much easier path to win the title and become a double champ to beat Blachowicz than it would have been to beat Jones. But it is odd. I mean, and Tyron Woodley, too, you know, take the last number of losses out of it. The guy's still a good person out in the space. Kind of odd, too, that Tyron Woodley loses 3 in a row. We haven't seen heads or tails of him with the UFC broadcast, with ESPN. It's just like he kind of fell off the face of the earth. And it's unfortunate because I really like Tyron Woodley, which isn't a popular sentiment. But yeah, it is kind of odd, though, that Adesanya was willing to make the move once Jones left.
Yeah, I think for me, it's just like, you know, you can attribute anything to, and this is where conspiracy theories come.
Oh boy, don't start.
Well, no, hold on. You can attribute anything to saying, oh, this guy's playing chess and not checkers. Yeah, you could say that.
Well, who says that?
Everybody says that. So
no,
I guess
no.
Who says that?
The guy, the bar fighter that fought that lady over in Germany.
Is that right? He says that? Yeah. So I just think that, you know, I do think that Adesanya should do things in his way, on his terms. I think that's smart. But it's going to look this way. Like, you can't say, I'm Mr. Guy that takes on all comers, and then you bounce from 85. I mean, to say he cleared out the division, sure, but there were some guys that were on the move when he left, and then he waits. You know, I would be, you know, everybody that's critical of GSP fighting Bisping should be critical of Adesanya fighting Blachowicz. Now, is Blachowicz a little bit more of a loaded cannon than Bisping was when GSP fought him? Probably. But, you know, is there a lot more danger? You know, you go knocking on Blachowicz's door, something real vicious is coming to the door. So is he an easier fight than Jones? Probably. But yeah, this is not an easy way out necessarily. But I don't think you can talk all that shit about waiting, and then as soon as John leaves, you know, it's like, you know, you're dating someone and you think they're cheating. Like, I'm not cheating. Then you break up and they're dating a person a week later. You're like, boy, that was quick. That sure is interesting that you are dating this person that quickly. There's something to that. Like, John leaves and already you've got a fight booked. Now, that could have been the UFC leaning on him, but and saying, hey, we want, you know, Jan's our new champ, and he's not promotable, so let's throw you this opportunity. Who's to say? But, yeah, I think it's tough. It's a tough look, but, you know, that's why he's the style bender, man. He takes these tough looks and kind of molds what he wants them to be.
And if he can kind of control his own narrative with it, too, it'll kind of snuff out the voices that are saying that, you know, he doesn't deserve it to an extent.
And with that, this episode of Early Stoppage is in the books. Craig can be followed at Craig Allen FFB. I can be followed at SM Cornerman. The fight has been stopped. We'll see you next week. Craig, say something witty.
Let's get into it. And also check out the Fight Companion and Question Mark Kicks on Saturday.